CBS Eye on the World with David Petrucia, the author of the new book, Roosevelt Sweeps Nation. I'm John Batchelor, and we're about to look at two of the most important figures of the 1936 election who were not elected but made very important contributions to how the president, Franklin Roosevelt, saw his campaign ahead. The first is Francis Everett Townsend, born 1867, a senior figure who is a physician, and he comes forward with the Townsend Plan. This is in the time of great want and doubt for the people who are elderly in America. At that time, that was considered 60 years plus was elderly. David, Francis Townsend looks to be an amateur, and the fact that he enters into politics at all is so unlikely. What do we need to know about how Roosevelt thought of Townsend?
Well, Townsend was this old geezer doctor who writes a letter to the local paper saying we've got to have this plan, which is going to give $200 a month to everyone over 60. And they will have to do two things for it. One, not work anywhere. And two, spend it all in 30 days. He thinks this is going to be create a velocity of money, which sort of like priming the pump, getting the economy up and running. He's a pretty dull fellow otherwise, but millions and millions of people join these Townsend clubs in around the country. And they start electing congressmen. Now, Franklin Roosevelt, well, first off, one thing about Franklin Roosevelt is for all his big spending, hates the dole. He hates the idea of people just sitting around and getting a government check. This is one reason why we have so many remnants, relics, artifices of the New Deal still around today. He built all those post offices and dams. He wanted people to do things for them. And the Townsend Plan is just a giveaway, and it's a giveaway based on a use tax, which is 2% on every transaction in creating a product or service. So you have a pencil, and it may be 2% on the wood and 2% on the lead and 2% on the eraser and 2% to sharpen it. And this is going to cause amazing increases in the cost of goods. Franklin Roosevelt hates this plan, but he's not crazy about doing old age pensions until the Townsend Plan threatens to sweep the nation. Harry Hopkins, his big welfare advisor, gives a speech one day and says, oh, the next priority has to be old age pensions. And Franklin Roosevelt the next day says, no, it's not. But when the Townsend Plan is introduced into the House of Representatives the very next day, Franklin Roosevelt introduces Social Security.
So this is the driver of Social Security.
It really is. Franklin Roosevelt is in many instances reactive to things. There are things he obviously wants to do, whether there's outside pressure or not, like the CCC or the TVA. These are things he's always cared about. But other things, maybe he cares about them, but maybe he has to be pushed into them at a certain point in time.
Now, Townsend is an extremely convincing about his plan, but he will have associates who successfully turn it into a money-raising scheme across the nation and a publication that sells advertising to what you'd have to say are patent medicines. In other words, it becomes an operation we recognize as merchandising. However, Townsend will link with another dynamic figure of the period whom everyone probably has heard something about. His name is Coghlan. He's a Roman Catholic priest born in Canada, Ontario, Charles Edward Coghlan, called Father Coghlan. And what is important here is that Francis Townsend has no presence on the radio, the new technology of mass communication in the 1930s. Franklin Roosevelt is a star on the radio. He has a voice that is convincing and warm and intimate to enter into the homes of the nation. Father Coghlan has a similar, even more completely actor's voice. And he enters into this story first as a radio priest talking about Bible incidences or telling stories. And then he converts to politics. David, what made Coughlin move from talking about the Bible to talking about the New Deal?
Well, there's at first he starts moving into politics and going against Herbert. He hates Herbert Hoover. He hates prohibition. He hates divorce. He hates birth control. And after 1930, when Franklin Roosevelt is reelected in a landslide as governor of New York, he sees Franklin Roosevelt as the alternative to everything he's opposed to. And he thinks that he can influence Franklin Roosevelt on largely monetary policy. He's very interested in that inflationary policy. They meet during the election of 1932. But like so many other people, like Al Smith, like Huey Long, like Raskob with the Democratic National Convention Committee, these people are going to eventually turn on Franklin Roosevelt. And so by 1935, 1936, you're going to find that Coughlin is no longer on the Roosevelt train and is looking, in fact, to challenge him. And he's going to team up with Father Coughlin. He's going to team up with the remnants or the singular remnant of the Huey Long movement, a fellow named the Reverend Gerald L. K. Smith, who was maybe the equal of Huey Long on the stump. He's going to bring Townsend and Coughlin together to form that third party that Huey Long was looking to form.
So the reason Coughlin turns on Roosevelt is because Roosevelt stopped conferring with him, and Coughlin felt he had been brushed off.
So, he had been used.
Initially, he's for him, and then he's against him. And he links up with Townsend, the Townsend plan, and Reverend L.K. Smith, who must have completely been an over-the-top figure to outdo Huey Long. And what's important here is how Coughlin and Roosevelt deal with each other. Roosevelt calls him the Padre, and now we go to a scene that's impossible to believe, but David presents it so I've read it twice now, and everything about it is magical. It is September 1935. Roosevelt's at his home at Hyde Park, relaxing, and he's now thinking about how to build the campaign, and he's made arrangements for Father Coughlin to come and sit with him and talk about their differences and how they can work together in the campaign. Coughlin is reluctant at first, gives an excuse why he can't travel from Detroit to New York. But Roosevelt insists, and so Coughlin shows up at Albany Station, in Union Station in Albany, and he's picked up by a man in a Rolls Royce. Who is it, David?
Why, that's Joseph Patrick Kennedy, who in fact had arranged the phone call for FDR to call the Padre and get him on the road or on the railroad to Hyde Park. And the timing and the coincidences of this meeting are crazy.
David, it's really hard to believe that it happened. Let me introduce you to tell the whole story. They get in, Coughlin gets in Joe Kennedy's Rolls Royce. They drive the hour or so to Hyde Park on the Hudson River, a beautiful setting. And I recommend everybody visit Hyde Park, because you can understand the staging of what is about to happen. They come to the front door. Roosevelt's asleep because he sleeps in late. So they make themselves breakfast, and then they hear the president stirring upstairs, coming down. At that moment, Coughlin approaches the president. Please, David, take it away. It's really hard to believe that it happened.
Well, it is, and it's harder to believe that this is the morning after Huey Long was shot to death in Baton Rouge. It's also hard to believe that some accounts, or at least one account, says that Eleanor Roosevelt was on the same train as Father Coughlin. And where she went that morning, I don't know, but she was often had her own agenda. And so in the Rolls Royce, Joe Kennedy drops the Padre off at the mansion. And then FDR says, Well, Joe, why don't you go look at the pigs while I go talk with Father Cogman and confer on things? So he just brushes off this multimillionaire to get lost for the day. And they are there for, it looks like, Cogman says, for 6 hours talking. Now, we don't know exactly what they said, but it didn't seem to go well because FDR, the president of the United States of America, asked Father Cogman to stay for dinner, and Father Cogman says, no, I got another appointment. I'm seeing a friend in the Berkshires. I got to go. And that's about the last meeting they had. And after that, it's, as they say, war.
We're talking about a moment in time. So, the war between them, September 35, to the campaign in 1936, Father Cogman remains an extremely vital figure in that time, though he's on the outs with the president. Is that correct, David?
It is correct, because he has a radio network. Originally, he was on CBS. They bounce him during the Hoover administration, but he forms his own network. He's like Mr. Syndicated Radio back then. And people listen to him and trust him. And he comes into, like Franklin Roosevelt, he comes into their homes every Sunday night. Now, Franklin Roosevelt does not do this to the extent that Cogman does. From April 1935 to September 1936, there are no fireside chats. It's hard to believe that. But Cogman is the bigger radio presence.
And Cogman now back to teaming up with Townsend, with Smith, and with a congressman named Lemke, from, I believe, Nebraska is my memory.
North Dakota.
North Dakota, thank you. What is it that they want to achieve? How do they think of their campaign?
They are following the tried but never true strategy of messing up the major party candidates and forcing the election into the House of Representatives. But these guys are amateurs. I mean, even Lemke, he's a two-term congressman from North Dakota. Townsend and Gerald L.K. Smith and Cogman had never been involved in electoral politics before. And Franklin Roosevelt, he's the pro. He thinks of this stuff 24/7. And they can't even get on the ballot in the big states. They can't get on the ballot in New York or Illinois or California. California is Townsend country. They're not on the ballot. So they're going to end up with only 1.2% of the vote. And also they have a problem that, you know, I've met Bill Lemke and he's no Huey Long.
Right.
Well, actually, I never met him. But
we're looking at what Franklin Roosevelt is thinking about are the challenges he must overcome without Louis Howe in the summer of 1936 into the campaign season. There are people who are going to be on the ballot, however, that also worry him. And we're going now to both the socialist parties and the Communist Party, vital in the 1930s because of the scale of the economic tragedy. David Petrucha is the author of the new book, Roosevelt Sweeps the Nation, Roosevelt Sweeps Nation, FDR's 1936 Landslide, and the Triumph of the Liberal Ideal. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.